Good afternoon, Juno. Welcome to a Juno Afternoon. And this show is a collaboration today of the Black Awareness Association of Juno and KTOO. We have two very special guests today that we are honored to speak with. These are two very accomplished music professionals, Lori Grace, who is a music teacher and the founder of Lori Grace Music and Future Stars, and Charles E. Dickerson III, who is the founder, executive director, and conductor of the Inner City Youth Orchestra of Los Angeles. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. It's a joy to be here.
Absolutely. So just a little bit about how this show came about for our listeners. A few weeks ago, we had the pleasure of interviewing a librarian who joined us via Zoom from Orlando. And it was a show that we did on Black literature, the history of Black literature and Black authors, especially in our school system. And we got a really good response from the community about it. And we all learned so much. I know that I did. And so that kind of got our wheels turning. And we thought, why don't we do a segment also on music and particularly Black music? And then that subject kind of unfolded. And then I was introduced to Mr. Dickerson, who is an African-American conductor, and I've never met one before, and that just opened up a whole new world of questions, and so we're in for a really special treat today. We're going to learn a lot, and I'm very, very excited to do this. So I'm just going to ask our guests to introduce themselves. Miss Lori, would you mind introducing yourself, please?
Hi, I'm Lori Grace, and I've been teaching for over 26 years in Long Beach Unified School District. I'm a recent retiree of 1 year. And I started doing this work by wanting to change how music was being infused for the 21st century learner, not just teaching choral music, but I wanted to begin to implement music and social movements, music and social justice, and how music influenced and changed politics and changed lives. And so, and I also teach privately, and that's what Future Stars is for. And we provide scholarships for young people for their first year of college.
Fantastic. Thank you so much. And I know Miss Lori personally. I'm one of her former piano students, and I took some vocal coaching with her as well. And she just quickly became more than my teacher. She's also my friend, my mentor. I look up to her very much, and I am just so ecstatic to have you here today, Miss Lori.
It's nice to be here. Thank you so much.
And Mr. Dickerson.
Well, thank you so much. Good day, Christina, and good day to everybody who's listening. Thank you so much for being with us today. I have the joy and pleasure of being a conductor, and that means that I'm a person who stands in front of musical ensembles and hopefully helps people learn music and then perform music in usually pretty grand settings, usually in a concert setting. I've been doing this for about 45 years. I am 68 years old, and I conducted my first orchestra with a chorus when I was 21 years old. I did a presentation of Handel's Messiah, and I've been doing this kind of work ever since then. Right now, I primarily focus on teaching younger people. I am the director, the conductor of the Inner City Youth Orchestra of Los Angeles and the Southside Chicago Youth Orchestra. And these are both, as is said in the name of both of those organizations, youth orchestras. And the core of the people that I have the privilege of working with are middle school and high school age, although many of the young people who join our orchestra come back even after they finish college and play with us because, frankly, they have no other place to play. So I have the privilege of working with a variety of folks from middle school age, generally through about at least through the 20s.
Wonderful. Excellent. Thank you so much. And we have a lot of questions about the orchestra and the population that you work with that we're going to get into a little bit later. I can't wait for that.
Good. Looking forward to it.
Okay, so I'm going to just ask some questions here about kind of around what's happening with the in our in our country and really around the world with the rise of the Black Lives Matter movement, all of the racial issues and tension that we've been experiencing for the past few months. And I'm just wondering how music plays a role in all of that, because I know that it does and I know that it always has. But just more specifically, I guess I'm wondering how. And so my question is, Black music has always been very bold in expressing what was happening with our people. And we've never had any issues celebrating ourselves in our music. We labored hard all week, and only our artists could say things that we could relate to about the conditions of our communities. So I am wondering, what are some of your favorite songs written during or about the good times?
Oh, well, that's very easy. You know, I thank my grandfather for always wanting to give me his historical account of music and keep me abreast on what he was listening to as a young man growing up. But Let the Good Times Roll,
yes,
was a favorite, you know, at Louis Jordan. And it was remade by Ray Charles. And I think Quincy Jones even put it on Juke Joint just to bring that into the 20th century. But, you know, we have music that brings us together, songs like Family Reunion by the OJs. You know, whenever families are getting together, that song is played for Black family reunions, and Before I Let Go by Frankie Beverly and Maze. You know, that is a song that unites us. I don't care what generation you are. You know, we even pulled our babies on the floor for that song. They've been birthed with this song. And so thank goodness for Beyonce, who, when she did Homecoming, she remade Before I Let Go and introduced this to the millennials, for those who never heard it, and a different audience. For all of her attendees there at Coachella that year. And so, you know, we also have music like the line dances, the cha-cha slide and the Cupid shuffle and the wobble that bring us together and unite us to have a good time and to express ourselves on the floor. And that this music has brought young and old together, and I think that it's a lot of it is timeless, and it will be around for a long time for us to celebrate ourselves.
Wow, absolutely. What a great answer. And all of those songs, like as you were listing them, I'm hearing them in my head, and it just makes me want to dance now. So yeah. That is absolutely
true. Can I add in a couple of years, please?
Of course, yes.
So, you know, Lori has pointed out some great, great contemporary music, but I want to go back to some of the old spirituals that choral music that choirs used to sing, particularly our people. And I want to specifically talk about three, because these were very important songs during, particularly right at the end of slavery, like Oh Freedom, Oh Freedom, Freedom Over Me. Before I be a slave, I'll be buried in my grave and go home to my Lord and be free. Free at last, free at last. Thank God Almighty, we're free at last. Dr. King referred to that song in his 1963 I Have a Dream speech. And another great one from those days, Great Day, the Righteous Marching, 1863, Day of Jubilee, God's going to set his people free. These are songs of joy and songs of celebration and exuberance about the relief from the conditions that African Americans had suffered since 1619, since we first arrived on these shores.
Yes. Excellent. Thank you so much. And I'm making a note of these things. And to our listeners, we will have a just a list of some of the songs and what we talked about today on our Facebook page, and we'll share that at the end of the show. Excellent. So just like we sang about having a good time and our good thing, we sang about the injustices, being oppressed, underpaid, segregated, etc. Who are the most influential artists who clearly told of our struggles? What songs did they write? And what are the stories behind them?
You know, I think that we have, you know, some unsung heroes and some people that we just don't know about. We call them Negro spirituals now, but there were people singing in the fields while they were picking cotton and tobacco, you know, the calls, cries, and hollers that we have, you know, singing songs like Nobody Knows the Trouble I've Seen. There were hidden messages that we were singing as slaves, you know. Sometimes I feel like a motherless child, you know. Mm. And so we don't know the author or who wrote some of those songs, but they were sung, and they're still widely known. We call them Negro spirituals now, but if I can fast forward to the 20s, 1920s, that we were always celebrating music through jazz down there in New Orleans, and we celebrated life with jazz as well as in death. When you hear the song "Oh, When the Saints," I mean that you can be walking in New Orleans right now in the middle of the street, and that "Oh, When the Saints," you know, just That's makes right. you want to just bop around and just, you know, dance around, because just the way that's played. And Sam Cooke in the 1960s was very, very influential in, he was a gospel singer who had bought a record company and had become a singer for rhythm and blues, and he made A Change Is Gonna Come in the 1960s. And unfortunately, he didn't live to see that song released, but mm-hmm. it still has a powerful impact today, A Change Is Gonna Come, because he wanted to see something different for his people. And if I can just kind of chime in about Marvin Gaye in 1971, when he wrote the anthology, What's Going On, that's over 40 years ago. And that song is still very popular today. You know, What's Going On, the things that he was talking about, the inner city blues, you know, the ecology. He was talking about what some of us are experiencing with climate change. And Stevie Wonder was bold with his voice by making Living for the City,
yes.
you know, and making Happy Birthday to make Dr. King's birthday a legal holiday. All of the proceeds went to that. So, you know, we've had music that have brought us over, that, you know, have had a message. When rap came along in the 1980s, you know, we were seeing the song The Message from the brothers in New York, the things that were happening. They were saying, don't push me because I'm close to the edge.
Yes.
I'm trying not to lose my head, you know, and fight the power from Public Enemy. And the song's going on, and we have some of our modern day poets, you know, Tupac talked about, you know, let's not call our women, you know, the B word, but, yeah. you know, because we come from a mother, and you know, we have to respect that. And so, you know, so many different artists, not just rappers, but, you know, and R&B artists have sang about, you know, what we've gone through as a people. And I think that Kendrick Lamar and a lot of these young rappers today have a new twist on what we hear that's going on in our community, Black Lives Matter. I think I heard the song Her saying, I can't breathe because of George Floyd. So there's more creativity coming forward as we see more of our evolution, you know, in our times today.
Absolutely. I'd like to lift up two songs to you that probably are not well known. One of them is by a composer by the name of T.J. Smith. And this song that he wrote was before 2009. And the name of the song was There'll Be Chitlins in the White House One Day.
Oh, wow.
And I think you know the message. I don't need to say, well, maybe your listeners don't quite understand the implication of that. But the implication is that one day there's going to be a black president. So
Absolutely.
This was before Mr. Obama was elected. But then I'd also like to share with you, Christina, that I do a little composing myself. And a song that I wrote in 2017 in tribute to Colin Kaepernick, This Is Why We Kneel.
Yes.
This is a song that lifts up why the NFL players were kneeling at that time. Of course, that's become a little bit more accepted in today's world. You see NBA players and the WNBA particularly, both the NBA and the WNBA have the words Black Lives Matter written on the floor of the NBA and WNBA finals. But all of that came about because I think of what Mr. Kaepernick did in terms of kneeling. So I wrote a song in tribute to him, and I hope everybody will go online and find it. You can find it on YouTube or Vimeo. This Is Why We Kneel, and it tells the story why we're kneeling.
Good. Excellent. And that'll be something that we'll also post a link to on the BAA Facebook page as part of the
Thank
resources.
You.
Absolutely. Ms. Lori, just to touch a little bit on what you said with the song, particularly the message, I grew up in the 80s and the 90s, and my parents were very, very strict Baptist ministers. And so we didn't listen to anything that was not a hymn, that was not praise and worship music. Like, I could not wait until I turned 16. I actually had friends making me mix tapes and stuff to play in my car where I could listen to anything I wanted to. And then that's kind of when I broke free and got to listen to all the music. I caught up on all the music in the world. But I really didn't grow up listening to a lot of the classics and oldies. And just recently, as you know, I was just preparing for this interview, I was listening to The Message. This is kind of embarrassing, but the first time I heard that was, I think, with Puff Daddy, and maybe it was Puff Daddy and Mace. And I had no idea that they sampled The Message from like the 70s or when did that come out? The 70s?
Yes, it came out in the 70s.
Yeah. And so the first 70. Time I heard it was sometime in 2000 something, or maybe the late 90s. And I'm thinking, this is, you know, new hot music. And it was actually sampled from, you know, 20, 30 years prior. And what they were talking about with, like you said, don't push me because I'm close to the edge. I'm trying not to lose my head because of all of the things that were happening. They were talking about the racial injustice and the oppression in that song. And it was kind of like the first, I kind of see it as the first rap song to really push that message. I could be wrong, but that's, you know.
You're right.
Okay.
It was, because there were a lot of things that were going on in New York at that time. There was a lot of deprived neighborhoods, and their neighborhoods had just went to nothing. But still people were going to Studio 54 and dancing disco and dressing up. So this is why hip hop really came about, because they were in their own neighborhoods. Listen, guys would come and take their speakers and pull them outside and plug up to a telephone pole to get some electricity so that the neighborhood could have the same type of feeling good and dancing. You know, disco was very popular back in the early 70s, and there was a discotheque that was very popular, Studio 54, that anyone would attend Studio 54. And so these young guys would have an MC. There would be someone DJing, and then there would be an MC talking over the music. So Nice. This is how we get hip hop. And it was for them to talk about what was going on. They didn't have the fancy clothes that could get them into Studio 54. They just wore what they wore, but it became a fashion statement. You know, Kangol hats and snapback hats and you know, the clothing that we now saw as hip hop, or we see as hip hop wear.
Yes.
Zoot suits.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah.
So, you know, this is becoming become a hot topic in the past few months, where we're raising the conversation about racism and equality and justice. And it's always been an issue, but just especially since the death of Mr. George Floyd, it's resurging. And so now we're kind of taking a look at where racism exists just across the board. And so my question is, do you believe that racism exists even in the music industry? And if so, in what ways?
Well, absolutely. I think we have a young man, Lil Nas X, who very clearly, when he made the Old Town Road, it was not in the category of rhythm and blues. The Old Town Road was a Western song. It was a country song. And the country artist community and country music listeners did not want to accept that young man because of the color of his skin. And it took the artist Billy Ray Cyrus to come along and to help push this song, because it was a country song. I mean, we've seen a few African-American country artists in country music, you know, Charlie Pride. You know, there was one or two. And our music, you know, we're from the South. Our music had country influence. The banjo comes from Africa. And so, you know, we have Lil Nas X, getting back to him, he had to try to get some help to push that song, Old Town Road, which won 3 Grammys, by the way, this last year. So not only was that song received by African Americans, but it was a colorless song. It was a song that reached different radio stations, and it was played, sold millions of copies. And it's a song that my granddaughter loves to listen to. Whenever she's in the car, she goes, "Put on my song, Old Town Road." And you know, it's a fun song to just move around to, but it was with the category, because of the Grammys, there are different categories of music, and it was a country song, and he won. It was a contemporary country song, so I'm glad to see more African Americans moving into the area of country music, but I still think that we still have some barriers that we're trying to break down. I mean, look at how Cardi B has influence rap music,
yeah,
with her Latin feel, you mm-hmm. know. So, you know, some of these things are being taken down and, you know, dismantled.
Christina, I believe that you were asking about racism in the music industry. You know, everybody knows the name Motown, but very few people understand that, or Stax Records. Very few people know that Motown primarily became what it became. It became the one place where African Americans could go and record, because in years past we were not encouraged or not permitted in many studios to actually go in and record. And Berry Gordy saw this problem, and he tried to alleviate it, and in fact did a great job at doing so by creating a place where black artists could go in and actually record. And of course then after all these great hits of the 50s came out, and Motown got its label that it did, I think Motown also had a great influence in helping black artists cross over. And by crossover, I don't mean just crossover in terms of genres of music, but actually have white people enjoy the music that was produced by black people. And this helped to break down, even that kind of thing, helped to break down racism within America. For white people to be able to dance to the music of somebody black, finally allow a black person to come into a club where only white people were allowed to be the entertainers. Mm-hmm. Well, we finally got the opportunity to go in and become the entertainers. Finally, at some point, we even got to go in and be some of the patrons of some of those institutions. But racism still heavily, particularly impacts the classical world, which is a world that I know quite intimately. I happen to serve on the board of the League of American Orchestras. I am one of five African Americans on a board of 60 that oversees essentially the orchestra world in the United States. Mm. And I can give you some pretty up-to-date statistics. Regrettably, while African Americans comprise 13% of the American population, we only comprise 1.8% of the workforce of American orchestras.
Wow.
While Latinos make up 13% of the U.S. population, they comprise only 2.5% of the workforce in American orchestras. There are efforts that are currently being undertaken to try to improve those statistics, and my organization, the Inner City Youth Orchestra of Los Angeles, actually is engaged and involved in one of those projects. We have learned that one of the reasons why the statistics are so low with respect to African Americans and Latinos being part of the orchestral world is that we oftentimes do not win the auditions. Now, there were in order to get into an orchestra, you have to win an audition. Mm-hmm. Just like if you're going to be a part of a baseball club or something, you got to pass the tryout. Well, in the classical music world, particularly in the instrumental music world, there are auditions, and we were not doing well on the auditions. A lot of us felt as though, well, part of the reason is because the minute they see us walk out on stage to take the audition, they don't want us.
Right.
So the industry adopted a process. They started putting a screen down, a screen that you couldn't see through. So African Americans, and this impacted women too, by the way. When a woman would come out to take an audition, a lot of the old white men didn't want women to be part of the orchestra. So the minute a woman walked out, they'd say, "Oh, very nice. Thank you for your audition." That would be the end of it. Mm. So they put a screen down. And what happened is that women did quite well once the screen went down. African Americans and Latinos still have not done as well. And now there are special programs around the country, here and there, and our orchestra conducts one of these programs to actually assist young people who are aspiring for a career in an orchestra to take and win auditions in American orchestras. So it's regrettable to say, but racism is still quite rampant in the music industry. I particularly see it in the classical music industry. One more thing I want to say about this. I find it I'll use the word ironic. I could use other words, but ironic might be the kindest word I can use.
Okay.
To find that so many organizations, particularly white-run organizations, now that George Floyd has died and everybody has seen actually what happens in the African-American community every day, now a lot of these white organizations are flocking to us to say, okay, how can we have our black people? How can we have our black moment? Can we have a relationship with you? Can you be our black face?
Yeah.
And all too often, regrettably, that effort is not sincere. It's just that people, particularly I found in the nonprofit world, want to be able to say, hey, look at our diversity work.
Right.
We're doing a great job with diversity, so therefore, fund us. But I hope that more and more entities will take this work seriously, and hopefully we all will realize that not just in the music industry, but throughout our country, there are people of all colors, of all genders, of all gender IDs, who are valuable people and who can actually contribute to the bottom line, the bottom economic line of every single business, every single industry, and particularly since Lori and I are in the music industry, we certainly hope that that will be the case with the music industry.
Wow.
Forgive me, that was a long answer, but there's so much to say about this point. Yeah.
Thank you so much. We're just learning so much here today and having a lot to think about. We're just going to take one moment here and pause for a commercial break. And when we come back, we will continue this conversation. We'll be right back.